Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and this week I'm really happy I get to welcome to the show author of Brand Against the Machine, John Morgan. John is a branding and marketing specialist who helps entrepreneurs build their brand and create a community of raving fans, and that's so important. He has also been branded himself as a force to be reckoned with when it comes to branding. He has worked with some of the largest brands in the world and has worked with Fortune 500 companies, TV stars, and entrepreneurs just starting out to those who are making over $150 million a year in sales. I'm raspy today. I apologize. I don't know why. My voice is a little rough today. So with the advent of the internet, social media, and the rise of entrepreneurship, branding is just not for mega corporations anymore. And John is here to show us how branding and creating relationships go hand in hand. So good morning, John, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am really excited to have you on the show today.
I am very excited as well. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we met on Susan Baranzini Moe's event, and like I was telling you just a few minutes ago, I got so much entertainment value out of watching the way you were interacting with people. I mean, I was rolling most of the time, and I won your book. So, I mean, this is a win-win for me.
That's right. Well, hopefully you like the book.
I do. Like I was telling you just a few minutes ago, and I'm still reading it. It's one of those books that you ought to see. I should take a picture of it. It is, I'm almost breaking the bind, you know, because I've got so many sticky notes in it.
That's
you know how
fun.
You just, you ought to see it. I have yellow, I have purple, and right now I have blue in there, and I have to find another color. But I keep going back, and I'm finding things that, like I told you earlier, well, I knew that. That's pretty good. I knew, good for me. I was already, you know, on top of that. I'm like, oh, crap, I didn't know that. So it's a great book, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Well, listen, before I start peppering you with questions, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself if they haven't quite heard of you yet?
Sure. I'll give the shortest version possible because it's not that interesting of a story to begin with. But I basically have always been an entrepreneur. I've never had a real job where I've, you know, had a boss and all of those things. Actually, I did, but I only had it for 4 hours. So to me, that really doesn't count. But I've always had the entrepreneurial spirit. And when I sort of started, I guess you could say, my actual career, very early on, I was studying marketing and branding and just sort of helping friends out who had businesses, and my parents had a business, so I was interested in, you know, helping them and finding ways to, you know, just try some ideas, but I never thought of it as a career. So it was time for me and my fiance to get married. I needed to get, you know, a real job, sort of, and I became a real estate agent, and that was great because I was young and no one knew who I was and no one cared, so I had to build a brand, you know, from the bottom up. And I grew that into a large real estate team. We became one of the top teams in the state of Tennessee. And then I actually sold that business because real estate was not my passion, and helping businesses market and brand themselves was. So while I had the real estate business going, I started consulting with people and speaking at events and all of those kind of, you know, fun things, and just realized that not only was I making more money doing that, but that's really what excited me when I woke up in the morning. And so, like I said, I sold the real estate business and then have been doing this full-time ever since.
How long have you been doing this, John?
I first started consulting in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been 12 long years, which makes me sound really, really old. Well, I'm actually not that old. I was 19 when I started.
I know, and that's, I started to argue with you, but I thought, no, he's my guest. I can't beat him up in the first 5 minutes. So,
sure
now 15 minutes in, I might start arguing with you about stuff. But no, and I know that you're still quite a young guy, so you have been basically, you took your entrepreneurial spirit and just ran with it at a very young age. And I think that is marvelous.
Well, it started kind of by accident. I never thought of myself, for a long time, I never thought of myself as an entrepreneur or anything like that. I mean, my parents owned their own business, so I suppose I grew up seeing the benefits of that, which I'm sure influenced me more than I even realized. But the start of all of it was me being lazy and hating school. So I'm in high school, and they have these big magazine sales contests. And these contests are so big that the more magazine subscriptions that you can sell, the more you get out of school. So if you're, like, one of the top 10, you know, for the year, you get, like, 2 or 3 weeks out of school. You get automatic A's, you know, on your grades. Like, when I think about it, it's actually a horrible system. But basically, I was thinking, okay, this is, you know, great. I'll do this. And my brother, who's 4 years
old. It sounds like bribery, doesn't it?
It really does. And my brother, who was 4 years older than me, had done really well in, you know, these contests and stuff when he went through school. So I kind of had the pressure of, you know, not wanting him to have done better than me. And so I just focused on, you know, selling magazine subscriptions, and then was the top salesman of this each year in school. And then after I graduated, where these contests are so popular, such a big deal, a gentleman contacted me who was going to be a senior. And so I'm graduating high school, so I'm done. And he contacts me and he says, hey, he said, my parents will give you $3,000 if we can get your list. You know, the list of people that you sell to every year, because he wanted to ensure that he was going to be the top guy his senior year. And for me to have just graduated high school and get $3,000 cash, you know, felt like I was a drug dealer or something. So I thought it was the greatest day of my life. So I was like, yes, absolutely. And that's when the bug sort of bit me, and I thought, okay, like, I'm going to do this forever. So then it was just all about, you know, these things. And right around this time, you know, there was a wonderful little site called eBay that, you know, came out. And all of a sudden I realized, wow, I can, you know, sell stuff on eBay. And one of the things that I learned then is, you know, this is a tip for everybody. No matter what business we're in the marketing business. We need to know how to sell ourselves. And one of the things that I noticed is that most of the people selling stuff on eBay were not writing good copy to describe what they were selling. So I would go on and buy bootleg CDs, which is probably not even actually completely legal, but at the time nobody was policing eBay. So I would buy bootleg CDs of, like, you know, bands and stuff that I liked, and I may buy these things for like $40 or $50, get them in from the eBay seller, and then I would relist them on eBay for about 4 or 5 times what I paid for it, and then I would just write better sales copy to sell it. And that was actually how I sort of funded all of, you know, my business, I guess you should say, up until I, you know, started real estate.
And I think you made a very, very important point there. Not too many of us want to be called a salesperson. There is that stigma. I've been called a natural salesperson. I've also wanted to grind my stiletto into the instep of the person who said that to me. The truth is, we have to be able to sell our ideas, our personality. We're pretty much these days, and we'll get to that later on in the show, but these days with the way the internet works and with the way solopreneurs work, we're pretty much our own brand. And if we can't articulate what we do, what value services, you know, what our value proposition is, how we can assist you, how we can help you, we're kind of in the weeds, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember I had no sales training when I was in real estate, and my very first listing appointment I go on, you know, again, I'm pretty young at the time, and my wife and my mom, I'll never forget this, they went to lunch nervously waiting for me to call them and let them know if I got the listing, right? And so I went into this listing appointment completely nervous, and I do my presentation, and basically they get to the end of the presentation, they're like, hey, this sounds pretty good, but John, tell us, how many listings do you have? And of course, I'm brand new to the business. I've never even sold a house at this point. And so I just told him, I was like, the way I see it is...
You're my first.
If an agent has, 20 listings out here, then they're not sold. So if an agent has none, that must mean they've sold them all, right?
Ooh.
And they were like, yeah, okay, sure. And which was probably not the right way to sell them. But I realized then the power of selling, right?
Right.
But the big takeaway I had is I realized at that point, I had nothing that made me different than any other agent out there. So it wasn't going to be my experience that people were going to do business with me about. I didn't have the experience. And I didn't have a long list of, contacts. I didn't have, a Rolodex because I was young. All my friends were still, working at fast food restaurants and things like that. So it wasn't like I had, this database to tap into to get referrals. So I realized if I was going to, make sales, then I needed two things. I needed a reason to stand out so that people would call me instead of the other agents. And then when I got there, I needed to have massive value to give them so that they would hire me regardless of the fact that I hadn't been in business that long.
So did they hire you?
Yes, they did.
Good.
They sure did, yeah. But I didn't sell a listing.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah,
oh.
So the story does kind of end bad. In fact, my first year in real estate was so bad that I only sold two homes, and one of those was the home that my wife and I bought. Which probably doesn't count, but I'm counting it because two sounds better than one. My first year in real estate was horrible because I fell into the whole trap of, people know that I'm in business, so they'll just call me. I've handed out business cards and these things, and I just assumed the phone would ring, and it never did because, again, if you don't give people a reason why they should do business with you over your competition, then they won't. And just simply knowing that you exist isn't enough. Even my family knowing that I was in business didn't mean they were sending, their friends and family to me. There was still no reason why. And so that became the, where I sort of shifted my focus of, okay, I've got to stop worrying about being good at being an agent, and I need to start being great at marketing. And that's where, and I talk about this in the book, the difference between visibility and ability. Everyone focuses on their ability. They want to make sure that their product or service is good, and it needs to be. But if no one knows you exist, it doesn't matter how great your product or service is. You've got to understand that visibility is more important than ability, and they do go hand to hand. Your visibility gets you in the door. Your ability is going to keep you there. So I couldn't go into, a sales presentation and then not have the ability. I needed to be able to close and all of those things. But like I said, when I realized that let me focus on the marketing, then, I've got it made. And I remember in real estate, I won Sales Agent of the Month, which sounds, really fancy, right? I got to park like in the front parking spot. That was my reward. And there was an agent who had been in the business like 33 years who had won Sales Agent of the Month in like the last, 5,000 months or something. And so he was furious that I had won. And he was like, I don't get it. I know how to negotiate better than you. I know the market better than you. And he just starts talking about all this stuff. And I was like, no, you're absolutely right. I was like, you are a better agent than me, but I'm a better marketer than you. So I am now going to end up winning every single month because I knew how to make the phone ring better than he did. I said, no matter what business we're in, we're in the marketing business. If we can't figure out how to generate leads in our business, then our business is going to dry up and it's going to die.
Right. And you see this so much, and I'm sure you see this as well. On the internet, I get this a lot. They'll call me and say, Denise, I've had another web developer build a website. It's a pretty great website, and I'll go look at it. And it may be a mamma jamma site. That's a technical term, by the way, mamma jamma. But my next question to these people is, well, how are you marketing it? And there's this silence because they're not.
That's right.
They think built this gorgeous site. There it is. Come get me.
Well, that's right. And they create these sites that are basically a fancy brochure. And not only that, but they then also create content that's just, bland.
Boring.
I mean, this is the problem with, social media and blogging. I know so many people who are smart, but they say, hey, this stuff doesn't work. And the truth is, it doesn't work unless your content is relevant and value to people. valuable to people. I read a great book by Bob Berg called The Go-Giver. Which
I know,
was
me
a,
too.
Yeah, very much a life-changing sort of book for me because, it's not just one of those books that sort of reinforces the things that you think, but it's one of these books that, pushes you, right? And it sort of challenges you. And so every time I want to write a blog post, I sit here and think, wait a minute, am I really giving value? Because if I give more value to my audience than my competitors, then that shows in my bank account. I win. So it's not just about me blogging, because I've got a schedule. It's me blogging because I've got something to say. It's not just about me tweeting a bunch of times a day because I think it's fun and I want everyone to know what I'm doing. It's, because I'm trying to build real relationships with people and real relationships with my audience. These things take time, and that's the thing that no one wants to, hear, is that the patience part of it, right? And it doesn't mean that success takes time. Success can be quick, certainly, but like I said, in terms of adding value to your audience, it's something like everyone should be working on getting better at, but instead they're just working on the next, shiny object and chasing different ideas rather than building any kind of, solid core or foundation to their business. And like I said, that's just very frustrating because then they scratch their head and wonder, why blogging doesn't work or why social media doesn't work or any of these things, right? They think, oh, this stuff doesn't work. I remember I spoke at an event, this has been years ago, and this is one of those events where every speaker got up and had to sell something, right? And I'll never forget it. Every hour there's a different speaker. At the end of every one of their presentations, they're selling some kind of, huge product, right? And I was kind of nervous about it because, I wasn't sure how I would sell on the stage. I didn't have the recognition that some of the other speakers had, and I just wasn't that great at, say, selling from the stage. But the gentleman who went on before me spent about 50 minutes of his presentation explaining what his product is. Right? And I was bored to tears, and I'm pretty sure the audience was as well. So he came up the stage, was taking a look at his sales, and literally as they're introducing me, I hear him say, and I quote, "This public speaking thing doesn't work." And I'm thinking, well, you did a really bad job at it, dude. Like, that's that's why. So I got up there, and because I was so nervous about selling my set, that part for me, I ended up spending like 58 minutes on a presentation. Giving value, right? And then I spent like 2 minutes, and my sales pitch was, this is it, like exactly. I said, here's what I've got, here's what it's going to do for you, and here's what it cost. And then I walked off stage. And I ended up making a lot of money for a 60-minute time period. And it, like I said, it all came down to the fact that I focused on giving value, and he focused on selling. And the more value we give our audience, the more those sales seek us out, and they're attracted
Absolutely.
To us. And now all of a sudden, instead of you having to beg people and convince them to do business with you, instead, they're just coming to you. That's what happens when we have trust. When Apple comes out, with the iPhone 12, I already know I'm going to buy it. They don't need to convince me of it. And if you look at what marketing Apple does do, which they don't do a lot because they don't need to, there's no convincing of it. They're just saying, hey, here's the iPad, $699, go.
Right.
That's the market. Because they focused on value, making stuff that's relevant to their audience, and building that trust.
Right. And you said something earlier, too, John, that's so important. You were talking about blogging and all the different things that lead people to you. And some people, and I get this all the time, and you may hear this as well, I don't have time to blog. I don't know what to blog about. Whine. But I have a case study. I have a client. She's been a client of mine for many, many years. And I always tell people, you've got to blog at least 3 times a week, and you have to be a resource. If you don't have anything to say about your own stuff, find something interesting in your own industry and share that information with your audience. It doesn't have to be your own. I'm happy to share your book. I'm happy to share Sean Moffitt's stuff. You guys are doing great stuff. Why wouldn't I share that? So she quit blogging. She got a lot of things went wrong in her personal life, and she quit blogging. Her sales plummeted. And it was because her social media marketing efforts just went in the tank. Now, she's been around for a while. She's got a good brand, but when she was no longer – engaging her audience and being a resource, they went away.
Yeah, and that's
and it's
what you
hard
have
to build that back up.
It's very hard to build that up, and everybody has a limited amount of attention, and we have a thousand
right.
things going after our attention. Here's what business owners need to understand. Your competition is everyone, right? You know, my competition is not just other people who talk about branding or who talk about, you know, marketing. My competition is music. My competition is movies and TV shows and people and everyone else vying for attention.
The honky horn in the front yard. Yeah, it could be anything.
Exactly. You know, we are mm-hmm. all, you know, going after that. And so, you know, because of this, like I said, you know, it's, you know, the future of business is marketing with people, not at them. You know, it's not about let's send them 1,000 ads or let's make sure they see our billboard 100 times. It's about now starting conversations with people, and blogging and social media and these things are just the tools that allow us to do that. And so that's where, like in your example, you know, this lady, you know, that's the problem is she stops blogging and then she stops giving to her audience. I don't think mm-hmm. everyone needs to blog, but I think everyone needs to give before they take. You know, everyone needs to, you know, to give several things and then, you know, then ask for something. I mean, it's, you know, this is going to sound, you know, kind of simplifying it, but everybody's audience is basically like children, right? Like, so if I want my son to clean his room, I need to, you know, give him something, right? Like, I need to say, hey, if you clean your room, you're going to get, you know, X, Y, and Z, or, you know, clean your room, or I'm going to take this away, or, you know, something like that. Obviously, I've got challenges to clean this room. But outside of that, it's the
alone.
Same thing. It's the same thing with our business. We can't ask our audience to do something, you know, whatever call to action may be, sign up for our newsletter or buy our product or, you know, come to our event or anything like that, if we've never given them anything of value to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very hard thing to ask in return. And I take a look at my clients. I've got the one area of my business that I will absolutely always brag about is I retain clients longer than just about anybody I know, which is I'm super, super proud of. But one of the things that I also noticed, Denise, is that the people who end up doing business with me are usually not someone who's never heard of me before. You know, I got a client
right.
last month, yeah. and she was like, I've been on your email list for 4 years. And I'm like,
you know,
well,
I heard you say
you
that.
So
I heard
like,
you that you
yeah.
were in a, Mike Stanger was interviewing you.
Yeah,
and I was
yeah,
listening,
you
and
know,
boy,
yeah.
my ears perked up because that's happened to me too.
Absolutely. And so what happens now is, you know, I want people to absorb my message multiple times, right, in multiple ways, and then the sale becomes easy. So if I can shorten that process, then I don't need it to take 4 years. So let me give you an example. If you've read my book, and then let's say 3 months later you see me speak on stage at an event, at that point you're probably far more likely to hire me and do business with me than somebody who's only following me on Twitter, because the way you've absorbed the message is deeper. You know, so this is why, you know, we can't just go and say sell to our, you know, to our LinkedIn database, right? Instead,
right.
get those people on LinkedIn to start coming to your blog. Get them on your blog to start signing up for your, you know, email list. On your email list, start doing webinars. Start, you know, again, you know, providing value, you know, training them, educating them, creating this great content. And then all of a sudden, like I said, they are super ready and sort of predisposed to doing business with you, to where you don't have to sell. And what happens then is as we attach ourselves to these people and their brand, then all of a sudden, like I said, it just becomes like automatic. Like I was talking about with Apple. Seth Godin's another example. He's probably my favorite author out there. I know.
I love to read him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, whatever Seth Godin writes, you know, his next 50 books, I am probably going to buy. Unless he, you know, goes out here and starts, you know, kicking kittens or something like that that makes me hate him, you know, he has built up a level of trust that I'm sold. You know, I mentioned Bob Berg and The Go-Giver earlier. You know, my favorite book of his is actually a book that he released not long ago called It's Not About You. That's actually, you know, my favorite one. The Go-Giver one probably has a bigger impact, but I think that It's Not About You actually has a, in some ways, a stronger message. But, you know, if you get these levels of trust, right? Scott Stratton, who's known as Unmarketing on Twitter, he is one of my best friends offline, like in real life, right? We got matching lockets and all that kind of stuff. So Scott, when his new book, he's got a great new book coming out called The Book of Business Awesome. And when he was finished with the book, he didn't have to write me and say, will you promote it? I reached out to him and said, when are we going to do the interview? You know, it was a given, right? I wanted to help him because he's helped me. You know, there's a relationship there. Yes, there's a friendship there, but that friendship, by the way, started on Twitter. Scott and I start talking on Twitter, and here's the key. Are you ready for this? We weren't talking about business. This is where everyone goes wrong. If you want to get on someone's radar and build a relationship with them, talk about what is important to them. Okay, so I love hearing compliments. I can't even tell you how much I love it, right? My ego is so fragile, I live for them. So when someone tweets me and says,
your
blog post was helpful, or I love your book, or whatever, I print those things out, and my mom hangs them on her fridge. You know, we love them. We celebrate. We have Friday night get-togethers where we talk about the people who love me. You know, I love that. That being said, it's the people who tweet me about my kids or about sports or music or these things that all of a sudden I notice I'm having a longer conversation with, because these are the things that hit me at a very passionate level, right? So Scott Stratton and I, back in the early days of Twitter, before the celebrities were there and kind of ruined it and it wasn't as crowded, he and I weren't talking about business. We didn't know each other previously. We were talking about rock music and golf. That's what we were talking about. And then what happened is that relationship went from several months on Twitter to then exchanging emails, to then talking on the phone, to then meeting in person at an event, to then him staying at my house for a week when he was doing a book tour in Nashville. You know, these are the things that happen. Relationships take time to build, but nobody wants to actually take the time. Nobody wants to connect to people in a meaningful way because they think, oh, well, this doesn't scale. You know, the big thing I get a lot, Denise, is people will say, you know, but wait a minute, what about when I sell the business? I don't want them to all have a relationship with me. You know what? Few people have ever built a business and sold it? Like, if you're worried about building, if you're worried about selling your business when you're just starting, you are already focused on the wrong things. You know, first building a business worth selling, then worry about it. You know, it's like the same thing with the branding. I have people say, should I brand my name or my company name? Because what if I want to sell this one day when it's making $10 million a year? And I'm thinking, get there first.
You think?
How about that, right? Because, by the way, when you've got a business making $10 million a year, why the heck would you want to sell it?
No kidding.
You know what I mean? Like, you did it. You did what very few people are ever wanting to do. But like I said, people start focusing on the end before they ever even get started, and it drives me insane.
Oh, you and me both. You know, I have people, for the audience who is listening who's not, you know, is not familiar with me just yet, I'm a web developer and a virtual assistant, so we pretty much do it all. We can, you know, build your website, do the social media, do it all. We're a one-stop shop. All that being said, people will come to me and say, well, you know, I want to build this thing, but I just don't have the time to make sure that I'm going to get all of the social media out there. Why not? I mean, are you going to walk up to somebody in the grocery store and say, I really like the looks of you. Let's get married. Do you have an hour? I mean, really? It just doesn't make sense to me at all. You have to take that time to get to know people, and particularly these days. Things have changed. I mean, we're not just mega corporations anymore. And you have to be able to just find out who people are. Do you want to work with them? Do you want to promote their products or their services? You know, I have promoted people on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, just because I like what they're doing. And I followed them around long enough to go, whoa, okay, I may not be able to work with you, and I may never work with you just because of the nature of my work, but you're a resource for somebody, and I will absolutely help you get your name out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how it works, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I mean, it's the law of reciprocity.
Right.
The more you give to someone, the more they kind of feel obligated to return that favor at some point. One of my close friends and has been a client is a gentleman named Spencer Shaw. And the way he and I met is I did a Ustream show years ago, late one, like Sunday night, right? Just bored out of my mind. I was like, let's do this Ustream show. For some reason, he found me. I critiqued his website on this show and thought nothing of it. Again, had no idea who the guy was or anything. The very next day, he sent me an email where he had already made those changes. So that kind of impressed me that, you know, yeah, he took action that quick. So then about a month later, he writes me and invites me to a big seminar. I think it was like a Tony Robbins event or something. He had a free ticket. He was like, hey, do you want to come as my guest? I didn't, mainly because I didn't know him. And so I thought that was kind of weird. You know, I didn't know, like, if he was an axe murderer or what. And so I was like, hey, thanks, but no thanks. But at the same time, even though I didn't go, like, he's on my radar because I thought, wow, like, you know, that was kind of a cool thing to do. And then a couple months later, he sends me a note and says, you'd really impacted my business. This is the results I got. You know, so he kind of gave me a testimonial and then had a gift card to a restaurant, you know, here in my area. And I thought at this point, like, okay, great. Like, I got to kind of do something. So then a few months later, he writes me and he says, hey, I'm going to be in Nashville. Can we get together? And I was like, absolutely. So he and I ended up spending an entire day hanging out. And I realized that this whole thing was part of his plan. Like, he knew, like, okay, I'm going to give him this. I'll offer this. Like, he knows how to build relationships with people and knows that if you give first without asking anything in return, when you are ready to ask, like I said, they're warmed up. They're primed. You know, they're ready to go. You just mentioned, you know, if you see somebody, you don't necessarily say, you know, let's go and get married and that work out for you. Unless you're in, like, Vegas or something. But when I met my wife, the very first time I ever spoke to her, I told her that we were going to get married. And, of course, she thought I was completely weird. Yeah, pretty much. And it took 5 years of dating her to get her to marry me. So we're still married to this day. So I ended up being right. But it didn't happen.
You probably scared the bejeebers out of her.
Especially because we hadn't met in person. I mean, I had seen her, so I knew she was hot. But we had only talked on the phone when I told her that we would get married. And by the way, we were in high school, so it was even more weird. But either way, the point is, I'm right. We're still married. And so.
And I'm sure you tell her that all the time. I was right, and we're still married.
Yeah, amazingly enough, that's the only time I've been right in the 15 years we've been together. That was it. But, yeah, so the point is, it didn't work the way, you know, I envisioned it, right? It took 5 years for us to get married. So, you know, and that was actually probably for the best. But relationships take time. We don't want to take the time, you know, to do them. But this is another thing, though, about business is like, okay, if the single relationship takes time and you don't have patience for that, then start building a relationship with a lot of people.
Right.
You know, get a lot of stuff going. I see people who will spend, you know, 4 months on Twitter trying to get, you know, one celebrity to tweet back at them. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? You know, first of all, you got no plan for what you're even going to do, you know, if you build a relationship with them. And second of all, you know, why spend all that time on one person? You know, don't do that at all. You know, here's the way I manage, you know, this stuff. I get about 80 to 90 people who I consider like my main, you know, people that I want to build relationships. These are people who are either prospective clients or people who are in a position to promote me, right, to promote the book and all those kind of things. And every single day, I make sure through Facebook or Twitter, email, you know, whatever, I reach out to at least 5 of them and say, you know, hey, how's it going? Hope life's treating you well. Because I'm just maintaining that relationship. So every month, I have made contact with these people at least once. So now when I, you know, do something and I want to promote something or whatever, you know, it's not like I haven't contacted them in 6 months and I'm now asking, you know, them for a favor. Do you see what I'm saying? Like now all of a sudden,
I do.
And it's also, like you said, you know, with, you know, you like to retweet people and share, you know, information and stuff they do. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Mike Stinger. I don't want to give him attention like that he puts out his content. But, you know, Mike retweets me a lot and he shares, you know, my post a lot. So it makes me pay attention to what he's doing. It makes me want to share, you know, his stuff, you know, from time to time. But
by the way, I have to interrupt here. He did say that you were paying him to listen today. So I want to know, did you send him his money?
I did not. I will never pay Mike Stinger a dollar ever in my life. Never.
Okay, Mike, I hope you're here.
Yeah.
But no,
see,
we've already
given Mike way too much attention.
We have. Let's
hopefully
move
everyone
back to
listening
you.
To this, if you are following Mike Singer on Twitter or Google Plus or whatever, go and unfollow him immediately and tell him that John Morgan said so.
And Denise, because this is your show.
Right.
So shame on me for bringing it up. I am so, so sorry. And I won't mention that we have Travis Robertson in the green room or in the chat room.
Oh, my goodness. Don't even get me started on Travis. And I can't see the chat room because the power's out of my house. So, Travis, you know what? I'm going to be nice to Travis, even though he's probably being mean to me. Travis is someone everyone should follow. So, his Twitter handle is Travis Rowe, like Travis R-O. But Travis is great. Here's another person who, again, relationships, you know, say can take time, but they don't have to. Travis and I met at an event simply because we had a lot of mutual friends who kept saying, you guys should meet each other, right? So we meet and immediately, you know, connected. We immediately realized we were on the same page about a lot of stuff. And that has turned into a great business relationship where Travis and I have partnered on some cool projects, but with a lot of cool stuff coming up where we're going to be coaching entrepreneurs and business owners and, you know, these kind of things. And that all, like I said, you know, that happened. He came together quickly. But at the same time, the ways Travis and I connected in the very beginning, we weren't really talking about business. We were talking about things that had happened in my life and his life that were similar. And, you know, our wives met and they hit it off. And, you know, it was like, you know, building a real relationship first and then all the business stuff happens, right? Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden, exactly what you were talking about earlier, I'm recommending Travis for speaking gigs. He's recommending me for speaking gigs. You know, I'm retweeting his stuff. He's retweeting my stuff. You know, that mutual back and forth comes through because there's a real relationship there. And that's, like I said, that's what it's all about. But nobody wants to do this stuff. So here's another thing where you can be purposeful about this, right? Chris Brogan, you know, chrisbrogan.com, mm-hmm. one of the most popular marketing blogs out there, arguably even maybe, you know, the most popular, just depends on, you know, if him and Seth Godin got like a cage match, you know, fight between blogs.
Yeah,
but,
that'd be tough.
You know, Chris is a great guy. You know, he's got, you know, good books out there, you know, huge following, puts out more content than anyone I've ever seen ever, and I do absolutely hate him for that because I don't understand how he can, like, come up with 17 new things to share every single day. But anyways,
he doesn't sleep, I'm convinced. I'm convinced that he's a robot.
There's no way the guy sleeps. It's absolutely insane, and he does it all with very little help, which is amazing. But anyways, Chris Brogan, you know, real popular guy, real popular blog. Obviously, when my book comes out, I wanted him to promote the book, right? Well, I didn't know Chris, so I didn't have that relationship with him. So I had to establish that relationship first. So, like, probably 6 months before the book came out, I started that process. I started connecting with him. And guess how I connect with him? I don't say, hey, dude, your blog rocks. No, he hears that all the time, all right? I don't want to, you know, stroke his ego that much. Instead, Chris is a comic book nerd. I used to be a comic book nerd until I grew up, and so I connected with him that way. You know, let's talk about superheroes. Let's talk about, you know, that stuff, right? And let it start that way to when it turns out he's actually been very gracious and been a wonderful supporter of mine in both my business and the book and all of these things, which I am absolutely humbled and think is awesome. But like I said, in the very beginning, it was purposeful on my part. You know, relationships don't always just happen by accident.
Not always, but sometimes you can make them happen. When you're looking for people of influence, I think what you're talking about here is brilliant because you're not assaulting them. You're not attacking them. You're actually taking the time to look at what interests them and find out if you have any points of interest and create that kind of easy back-and-forth flow of information and sharing. And I think that's what so many people miss. I can't tell you how annoyed I get when somebody I have never heard of posts their crap on my Facebook wall. And I'm just calling it what it is. It's just garbage.
You're exactly right. And you know what's amazing about that is we think now, like, people have that, and then they say, this is why I hate Facebook. And it's like, wait a minute.
I love Facebook.
Facebook. This stuff isn't Facebook's problem exactly or fault necessarily. This stuff's happening offline as well. Denise, I have still not once have I gone to speak at a book event for my book where there hasn't been at least one person come up to me and say, hey, John, you know, great book. Here's a copy of mine.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, this happens like constant, right? And I'm, you know, first of all, I get that it's nice. I don't want to be rude, but now here I am going to be rude. Second of all, it's like, this is my event.
Right.
This is my time, you know, to stroke my ego and look like the hero, right? Don't bring me up, you know, your self-published book that's, you know, about God knows what, right? Like, you know, this isn't my time. Second of all, especially when I'm out of town, this is frustrating because now it's like, I don't want to fly back with this thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have to stick this in my bag and, you know, all of that.
And
so
who can throw a book
away?
I can't.
I typically leave them in my hotel room.
Unless
the book is, you know, I don't know. I've never read one that someone just came up and gave me. And the reason they're doing it is obviously hoping that I read it, like it, and promote it. And again, it's like, you know, first of all, that's the wrong place. Second of all, it's the first time I have met them. You know, what in anyone's, like, right mind makes them think that that's an okay, you know, thing to do? You know, we have to stop, you know, marketing to people and trying to sell people the way that we hate it ourselves. I'm sure those people would be really upset if I just, you know, cold called them one night or just randomly knocked on their door and said, hey, here's a copy of my book.
Yeah. Tell me what you think of it and post it to the world if you don't mind.
Right.
Yeah. I think people don't stop and think about the common sense and the courtesy aspect of social media marketing, and that is what it is. Yes, we're building relationships. Yes, we're reaching out to people who can, you know, be a person of influence at some point if we choose to have that happen and if they choose to reciprocate. But common sense and courtesy has to play the biggest part in that, I think.
Absolutely.
And it seems to be lacking. So is your next your book going to be about etiquette? I hope.
etiquette. No, my next book, I don't know. Here's the funny thing. When I wrote the first book, I was done. I said, I'll never write another book again. And then the day my book came out, I ended up having a brilliant idea for book number two. And since then, I have had one more brilliant idea. So when the time comes that I will write a second book, which is still a long ways away, I have two really good ideas, but neither one of them, it will not be like Brand Against the Machine Part 2. It's about taking things further than that, and so it's going much, much deeper, and this time around, I'll have to actually do research.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I didn't do any research. I wrote the first book in 2 weeks.
You're kidding me.
I literally took everything that I knew in my brain and put it in that book.
Wow. It's a marvelous book. I really should take a picture of it and send it to you. I'm almost kind of afraid to. I mean, it's just bristling with sticky notes.
There's some wonderful quote that's like ancient, you know, from like the Chinese thousands of years ago or something that, you know, a book isn't meant to be read, it's meant to be devoured. And, you know, I'm that way. That's one of the reasons I still like reading, you know, the physical book so I can make notes and highlight stuff and, you know, all of these things. And that's been one of the coolest things is when people have sent me pictures and there it is, you know, there's 1,000 things underlined and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that that's, you know, wonderful. And it's a cool world that we live in that as an author, I can get that feedback, you know, that I can actually hear what people are thinking. And also, again, you know, it's like the book maybe opened the conversation, but now is my chance, you know, to talk to people. I've had people literally tell me a few times on Twitter that I'm the first author to write them back. And that is so sad and pathetic because I shouldn't be.
That is sad.
You know, I'm so not, you know, at that point where they should even be excited that I wrote them back. And so it's bad, you know, the standard that we have set that, you know, that is the case.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was neck and neck with Felicia Slattery for these books, and I beat her by a nose, and I was so happy. I was like, gotcha. She beat me by one on another one, though, too.
Well,
it was funny. We had this weird competition.
Felicia's a wonderful, Felicia's a wonderful person. She, and this is what's wonderful about the industry, you know, that we are in, is that people, like, we cross paths frequently, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
we did.
That's what
all of us.
I have spoke at events with Felicia I can't count how many times. It has been numerous times, and every time it's always an absolute pleasure to get to hang out with her. And that's, like I said, you know, that's the cool thing is we all do support each other because there's an abundance mindset rather than a scarcity mindset. Too many entrepreneurs are thinking that there's not enough out there for them. You know, they're so desperate and hungry to get their piece of the pie that they don't realize there's enough food for everybody. You know, there's think of how many books come out there. You know, there's enough people reading books for all of us to sell books and be happy. There's enough businesses out there for me to consult a bunch and everyone else, you know, to consult a bunch. There's, you know, there's enough out there, and we're, like I said, we get too much set on fear and scarcity where we think that, you know, every time our competition gets a client, that means that's a client we didn't have.
Right.
I used to have that attitude. I really did. But that's not the way it works. And coming from the real estate industry, this is where I had to change my own paradigm, because in real estate, it can get cutthroat. And we are, you know, competition, right? So if I'm sitting there in my real estate office with, you know, 50 other agents, I'm looking at them thinking, you guys are the enemy. You know, I don't want you to get a listing. You know, I don't want you to get a buyer, you know, and all this stuff. When in reality, like I said, you know, the truth is there's enough homes out there being sold that all of us could make a living off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing is true, say, for the business that I'm in now. There are so many people out there that need help that we all will be able, you know, to make money and help people without looking at things as competition. And that's why, by the way, we don't mind supporting each other. That's why we don't mind, you know, sharing, you know, different people's blog posts and things like that, because here's the thing, Denise. Everybody has a different personality, right? And your personality is such a core to your brand that somebody may resonate with one person and not another, and that's okay. So let's say, for example, let's use Travis Robertson as an example. He and I, we have a different message, right? But at the same time, where we do see eye to eye on so many things in business, there's a similarity there for sure, right? There's a lot of, you know, things that are congruent. That being said, I don't ever mind sharing his stuff, not just because we're now business partners, but I don't mind sharing his stuff because some people may like his personality and resonate with him more than mine, and vice versa. You know, Travis is a nice guy. I'm not. So some people who like non-nice people, they attach themselves to me. Some people who prefer to deal with nice people and all that, who are friendly, then, which is strange, they go and they gravitate, you know, towards Travis.
I know.
Where
I mean,
our partnership works because we have a good cop, bad cop, you know, kind of a thing.
There you go.
But like I said, that's the problem is we have a scarcity mindset in terms of business and what's out there for us, and that's not the case at all. I mean, look at the number of people who are on Facebook and who are on Twitter, you know, and these things. There are enough people out there for all of us.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talked earlier about Bob Berg's The Go-Giver. I was chatting with Larry Wingate one day. He's kind of a regular guy on my show, and he's a friend of mine. Bob Berg comes on my show quite a bit. In fact, he's going to be coming back soon. Larry was saying pretty much what you just said. You know, they're very disparate personalities, very. You know, Larry, of course, is, you know, terms himself a pit bull. Bob Berg is one of the nicest men you'll ever meet. But they have essentially the same message. I mean, they have very similar messages, very different deliveries. So people who will listen to Bob Berg, you know, may not really resonate to Larry. I happen to think both of them are fabulous. But you're right. I mean,
both of those guys are absolutely fabulous. And that's such a credit to Bob, by the way. Because I have been compared to having a similar style as Larry for several years now, which I take as a huge, huge compliment.
Huge compliment.
And Bob, the fact that Bob not only is friends with Larry and supports him, but is friends with me and has been way generous supporting me, that's the credit to him. Because we are not the same style as Bob Berg. You know what I mean? Like, and so the fact that that doesn't, say, bother Bob. I'm rough around the edges. You know, I say things sometimes that are crude, and, you know, sometimes I, you know, push the edge. Sometimes, to be honest with you, I go way too far. But, you know, Bob knows the people. You know what I mean? Like, he gets to know the core there. And, like I said, that's what's great because he focuses on sharing good content. And, again, it goes back to exactly what you were just saying. Personalities and things can be different. Different people will connect with different people, and that's great. But like I said, there's enough business, you know, for all of us out there, and it's been wonderful. And the thing that I've been the most impressed with in my career, especially in the last several years, have been the amount of people who in reality are probably direct competitors of me who have been some of my biggest supporters. You know,
that
has been one of the things that has been great.
But does that really surprise you, knowing what you know about human nature?
I mean, it does somewhat, because I think I'm more selfish.
Oh. I'm reading your book, and I don't see that.
Good, then I've got you fooled.
I may be the most selfish
entrepreneur on the planet. Here's an example. I'm speaking at an event coming up that is about, it's a branding event, right, put on by a guy who teaches branding. And he brings me in to keynote this event. That is very, very cool of him because, like I said, I am a direct competitor of, like, say, what he does, right? But by not looking at it that way and him realizing there's enough business for all of us, then, you know, it's a very cool thing to bring me in. Where I say I'm selfish is if I was doing my own event about branding, then I can tell you right now, it's the John Show, and I'm the star of it rather than me bringing in a competitor.
Yeah, but see, I understand his reasoning because by bringing you in, he's, you know, he has his service, you have yours. He's giving people choices, and people appreciate choices.
That is true.
As long as there's not too many. More than three, you've lost them. But, no, I understand what he's doing. I think that's brilliant, but I also get your point, too. I'm not sure I would be able to give up that little section either. I hope maybe I'll grow up one day and be able to do it. I don't know. Well, what I do want to talk about, John, very quickly, we've talked about the book not as much as I wanted to, and we're only about 10 minutes away. The role of confidence and the mindset to achieve success. You have been very successful at a really young age, and you're helping other people be successful. This is scary times. I mean, let's face it, there's some scary things going on in the world right now. You know, the economy is just not where anybody wants it, and it's not just here, it's global. So how do people maintain their confidence? How do they build confidence? How do they just relax and do what they need to do to become, you know, successful and happier in what they're doing? Do you have any kind of tips or advice?
It's a great question because it's something that I've personally struggled with for a long time. For many, many years, I struggled with depression. It's still something I fight. Self-esteem is still a huge battle. I've got days where I know that no one can best me at all, and then I've got other days where I just want to sit in the corner and cry. I think we all struggle with it, and so I think that's the first thing, is just understanding that if you lack confidence, then you're completely normal. And then the second thing is realizing that it is absolutely one of the most, if not the most, important key to success. Outside of taking action and, you know, business models and ideas and all that kind of stuff that, yes, is a factor and all that, at the end of the day, if you don't believe that you can be successful, you never will. It doesn't matter what you try. It doesn't matter how great your idea is or any of that. If you have doubt that you're going to be successful or you have doubt that your ideas are going to work, you're going to sabotage yourself. I wrote a blog post about this actually this week that, you know, you have to sort of check your expectations, and you have to go into situations in business expecting to win. You know, go into the sales presentation expecting to get the sale. You know, write the blog post expecting it to get shared, expecting to get comments. You know, do the webinar expecting to make sales. You know, write the book expecting, you know, people besides your mom to buy it. You know, if you expect to lose, that's exactly what's going to happen, because if you're expecting to lose, you are now going to limit the amount of action you take to make it happen. But if you've got the self-confidence in yourself to know, hey, no matter what, I am making this work because I can, then every bump in the road that you face is just that. It's a bump in the road. It doesn't mean that you have to quit going. You know, and so I think that's the big thing, is that we have to actually work on it. I read more books about self-improvement and, you know, my mindset and things like that than I do marketing or business or any of that.
Listen, I have a massive library. In fact, I interviewed Charlie Tremendous Jones. Do you know who he is, Charlie Tremendous Jones? Well, I interviewed his daughter last week, and she is now the president of Tremendous Life Books. My shopping cart is still open. I started my shopping cart 3 days ago. I'm up to $100, and I must have 30 books in there. I kid you not. I mean, it's just an amazing site, and you can get some terrific stuff. So anybody listening, go over to Tremendous Life Books. But I'm like you. I read everything I can get my hands on. But I do have a quick question about confidence and mindset, because I would not have known this about you. I mean, I just would not have known. You strike me as being somebody who is just out there having a good time every day, all day. And it's good to know that it's, you know, it's your person. I mean, it really is good to know that. But here's one thing that people come to me, and I'd love to hear what you have to say. They'll come and say, okay, I need this website, and I need this, and I need that, and I need to make $4 million by the end of the year. And I will not take them as a client, not until they've got their head screwed back on right.
Mm-hmm.
So am I wrong? Or because, I mean, they're looking at it from the numbers. They're looking at it. They're going to make people buy their stuff. It's not really a service. It's not really from their heart. It's all numbers. And I'm sorry, I can't work with people like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think
the one thing,
you know,
they've doomed themselves to failure already in my mind.
But, yeah, I mean, they're definitely sometimes, you know, focused on the wrong things. You know, the numbers are the reason, you know, are the way we keep score. And look, I'm in business to make money. Make no mistake about it. If I wasn't getting paid to do this stuff, I don't think that I would do it. I did it for a while.
But should that be your only focus? I mean, should you build around a business
around that? It's not my only focus. You know, I in my own sappy way, I feel like when I help someone's business get better, I help their life get better, and that's my contribution, say, to the world. But the reality is they're focused on, the end game rather than focused on, you know, what's actually going to work. And they have all these, you know, this checklist of, well, we need the website, and the website's going to need to look this way. You know, how many years that I have been, building my business and, you know, doing these things without ever having a blog, without having a book, without having, you know, video or any of that stuff. I was speaking at, you know, over 40 events a year, getting paid, you know, by the way, very well to speak at those events, and, you know, never had a, you know, demo reel or, you know, anything like that. All of those different tools are a crutch if we allow it to become that way. What we have to focus on is our path to profitability. We have to think, okay, this is the idea I've got. Get that idea tested as quick as possible. Before you spend $4,000 on some dude building you, you know, a fancy WordPress blog, why don't you go out and sell a couple things? You know, stop focusing on, you know, oh, I'm going to make $1 million with this, and prove your idea first by making $1,000. You know, and if
exactly.
you don't, then okay, adjust the idea or move on to another idea. There's a wonderful book up there called Getting to Plan B that I think everyone should read, and it digests and talks about how, you know, Google's model today is very different than when they started. Actually, when Google started, they were adamant in no way, shape, or form were they going to accept advertising dollars. That sounds like a joke today, right?
Google?
But in the, absolutely. In the beginning, their motto was advertising is evil. I'm not kidding you. Like, they were not going to allow it. Look at
I
Apple.
I did not know that.
Apple could never become dominant in the computer industry. They tried for years, and it never happened. Their market share was very, very small. So Apple moved to Plan B. And now we all have iPhones and iPods and iPads. And Apple is now, you know, the golden example, you know, of companies and all of that. That's the thing. We get attached to an idea, and we think, oh, this is going to be great. This is our million-dollar idea. Stop thinking that. Most million-dollar ideas start as a $1,000 idea, and then they grow from there. Make money first, and then do it. I cringe whenever I hear somebody say, oh, I've got this great business model. All I need is to raise, you know, $50,000 from investors. And I think you want someone to invest in your company? Go make cash. Go sell. And then you'll have investors beating down your door, because if you can show them that you know how to take an idea and turn it into a dollar, then that's somebody they want to invest in. If we look at the show Shark Tank, you know, that's the coolest show ever, right? What does Mark Cuban's always think? How many have you sold currently? That's what he wants to know. He wants to know that person knows how to go out there and sell the product first before they worry about, let's sell $10 million worth.
Exactly, and you have just explained very clearly why I can't work with these clients. At some level, instinctively, I know that they're just not ready. Now, I have had one or two come back and say, okay, I got it. Now I know what you were talking about. But for the most part, when I hear somebody give me this very dry numbers-related thing, you know, we've got to do this, we're going to do this, they're setting me and them up for failure, and I'm not playing in that pool.
Right. Exactly
so
right.
We are running out of time, and I've got to get you to come back because we've got so much to talk about. But I know people can get 3 chapters from your book. Where do they go?
If they go to brandagainstthemachine.com, they can get the first 3 chapters of the book for free. And they would also become about 2% more awesome if they do that.
Listen, I've got the book, so I'm at least 2% more awesome than I was before I got this book.
At least,
and I think
yeah,
probably
guaranteed.
More. Oh, there's a guarantee. Very cool. John, you've got to come back. Please say you will.
Absolutely, anytime.
Oh, nice. Well, I will get in touch with you and we'll set something up because there's so much about this book. And honestly, what I'd love to do the next time we chat, by then I will have gone through the book several times, I'm sure. And I'll have a lot of questions based on the principles in the book, if you don't mind.
Sounds great. I'd love to.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Today we have been talking with John Morgan, author of Brand Against the Machine, and he will be coming back soon. John, thank you. You've given some great and valuable information to our listeners, and I know they appreciate it as much as I do. Thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and John Morgan wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, John.